Well, it's time to check in and US, of course, get the perspective of how things have been in Nigeria. At this time, joining me on Morning Crossfire is Professor Chidi Odunkalu. Good morning to you. Thanks so much for joining in on Morning Crossfire. Good morning, Prof.
Good morning, Femi. How are you?
I'm doing very well. There's so much to go over in a few minutes, especially when it comes to rule of law in Nigeria. A subject of discussion that's come up several times, even this year, when it comes to some of the issues that there are to handle in the government and governance in Nigeria. What's your evaluation of the rule of law in Nigeria, and what does that even mean in Nigerian time, if it has a Nigerian definition different from what one would say is the universal definition in the legal circle and in democracy? What would you define as rule of law in Nigeria to be?
Well, I find it a very interesting notion. But it seems to me somewhat apocryphal to be speaking about Muhammadu Buhari and rule of law in the same sentence. I don't think that is. If you want to discuss the law of rule under this Buhari regime, I'm happy to engage in it with you. But if what you've invited me to do is to discuss rule of law and Muhammadu Buhari, I think it's a waste of my time. I'm not particularly sure I want to do that.
Okay, so let's discuss about the rule of law as we have it in an ideal democracy, and well, the law of rule, like you said. Let's pivot into that. What would be your examination of how things have been, or how things should be, actually?
Now, the point is that everything that involves rules under the Buhari administration or regime has been destroyed. The notion that all of us are under the same regime of rules no longer exists. Just yesterday, the police announced the deployment of 24 Assistant Inspectors General of Police. 19 of the 24 are from the north. 5 are from the south. Now, two things. First of all, the police is the oldest institution in Nigeria. It's been in existence since 1861. Secondly, the police is the biggest institution in Nigeria. It is that institution with reference to which everyone defines and understands Nigeria, because everyone wants to live in peace and security, and the police is the entity that is supposed to protect everyone in the country, all things being equal. If it is discredited by acts of political inequity of this sort, it is impossible for government to retrieve its authority and respect from amongst the people. So when you've got the collapse of safety and security in the country, it comes back to the same thing. The refusal of the government to honor basic principles of equity and to respect the notion of equal protection of the laws, which essentially is what your idea of rule of law is about, that everyone deserves to get the same deal for the same set kinds of things under normal circumstances. But having 19 inspectors, assistant inspectors general from the north and 5 from the south just doesn't begin to address that kind of thing. And so government has been discredited under a regime that does not behave as if the basic rules of the Nigerian constitution matter to it. And don't forget, the basic rule is what? Federal character. And you don't even need to apply the principle of federal
recording
character.
Recording in progress.
You don't need to apply the principle of federal character to understand that this kind of imbalance is not good for anybody. not for the government and not for the people. And under this kind of imbalance, no rules can prosper. That's the point, and that's the problem.
And I want to get into, I mean, you've already touched on the issue of federal character. Let's talk about human rights. You're the former, I mean, you've worked with the Nigerian Human Rights Commission. You left the organization, and it's a bit different now in terms of the human rights conditions that we have in the country. Some allude to the fact that action and inaction of the Nigerian government when it comes to how they engage in people who are creating threats to states, to people, to residents, and the likes of that is worthy of examination. Let's, for example, look at the southeastern part of the country. There are claims of human rights violations that have been put out there several times, and yet the Nigerian government is of the opinion that in this situation, what you have operating there is a terrorist organization that have terrorized the people in the southeast. That's alluding to the fact that IPOB is a terrorist organization, terrorizing the people of the southeast with their notion, and therefore their needs for action. However, on the reverse statement, some people also believe that, well, body action and inaction of the government, and extreme action in some instances, as they've described it, is some sort of human rights violation. What's your evaluation of the situation, for example, in the southeast, and how the Nigerian government has engaged in terms of human rights? Have they gone too far with their action or inaction, as the case may be?
Why do you want me to evaluate the southeast? Because my name is Chidi.
You're the former commissioner of human rights. It's a Nigerian problem in different places.
But the Southeast is by no means anywhere close to the most serious situation of human rights we've got in the country. Look, look at Kaduna State.
Okay, right? Great. Let's look at Kaduna State.
You can't open your mouth in Kaduna State or go from point A to point B in Kaduna State without being abducted or killed or ruined. Or now, the number of people killed in Kaduna State alone in any month is more than the number of people who suffer killings in all of the Southeast in a year. Okay? Even by the official numbers released by the Kaduna State government itself, in the first 6 months of this year alone, nearly 600 people, according to the official numbers from the Kaduna State government, have been killed. I'm not mentioning the numbers who were abducted and the numbers who are still missing. The state government, as we speak, has been forced to close all schools in the state. Is that correct?
Yes. They said not indefinitely, though.
That's just Kaduna State alone.
Mm-hmm.
I've not talked about what is in the month of June in a place like Zamfara State. Nearly 300 people were killed. Kebbi State, over 150 people killed, right? Now, this in the biggest site of killings right now, mass killings right now in Nigeria, is President Buhari's Northwest Nigeria. And it is also the place where Sheikh Gumi is telling us, comes out every day to tell us, that the bandits have a right to abduct school children because with the school children, they can collect money from the federal government. And when they come calling for the money, you should please give it to them because it is government money. It is not your money. Just tell the central bank to reopen the vaults and give them the money. Now, what is the response of the government to this? Basically, this man is advocating terror, right? What is the response of the federal government to this? They are working with him. And who is the person whom they remember to terrorize? That's the federal government. Bishop Kuka, who is actually advocating steps that will bring the country together and address the challenges facing the country constructively. That's the person that the government calls names. That's the person that they abuse. That's the person whom they have no regard for. So, now telling me to talk about the Southeast, wait. Wait, just wait a moment. Now, Children want to demonstrate for things that matter to them and things that matter to every human race and the human community. And what happens? Government sends helicopter gunships to bomb and strafe them or to harass them, right? But when so-called bandits show up, they can attack a community for over 5 hours, collect hundreds and hundreds of people, take them away, or they can attack school children, collect lots of people, take them away, operate for 3, 4, 5, 6 hours, nobody shows up. Helicopter gunships are not available to fight bandits. They are not available against Boko Haram. They are available, however, against protesters, peaceful protesters. And you're telling me to discuss Southeast. Now, the problem is a perversion of the authority of the state by a government that should know better, but chooses not to. And as long as that authority is perverted, no part of the country is safe from them. But the reality is that everyone knows that the real problem in this country right is where Muhammadu Buhari comes from. And that is the part of the country they don't want to address. So what do you want me to say?
You've alluded to a lot of things. I mean, if you're not talking the Southeast, one could also talk about Benue. The Benue governor in the last few days has been on fire. He said quite a number of, not on fire literally, but he said quite a number of things about Benue State, including the fact that he believes that a runover is being allowed by people outside of the country, people from Mali, people from Niger, to take over their lands in Benue State. And he believes the Nigerian government at the federal level. What do you think the state governments can do in such a situation where the human rights violations, we saw a protest of Benue people in for example, in Abuja here, saying they've been killed and their land should not be taken. And the governor is saying he would rather die rather than have the land of his people taken. I mean, these are very interesting political times where one would also reflect on so many other factors, including the sale of arms, where some international communities are saying we may not be interested at this point in time to engage Nigeria until we are sure about the human rights situation that is going on. One could also bring up the issue of El-Zaki, who was detained for 6 years while his court case was going on. And now we have detentions for some few other people who are somewhere being described by some quarters as people who are movement leaders. Some describe them as agitators. These are examples in the Nigerian of today. What do you make of such situations where it's in some instances it applies like understanding the law and applying the law sometimes is what is elusive?
First of all, we've got Buhari has appointed as Attorney General a man who appears to be perpetually inebriated. And it's difficult to take him too seriously when he enunciates his understanding of law and legality. The kinds of operations, approach to security operations that the regime favors as such as to endanger itself and the country and all the country's people, and therefore it is easy to see that that in terms of military procurements, most countries of the world that are serious will be unable or unwilling to supply necessary hardware to Nigeria because it could expose them to liability. You see, that's the real problem here, that because you cannot govern end user obligations, we reference once you've sold these hardware, so you sell them to Nigeria. This regime can apply the hardware that you've sold to them rather indiscriminately in such a way that the sellers then become liable for the misdeeds or abuses procured by the Nigerian government as the users of the equipment. And that is why, for instance, the Americans have now placed a hold on the Cobra attack helicopters. It's nothing more than that. That's why the Nigerian government is more comfortable, or will continue to be more comfortable, operating in the international arms black markets, or the gray markets of international arms, going to Czech Republic, for instance, or buying from middlemen in different places, because no one can really trust what the government will do with this equipment. And that's the consequence of a regime that operates, that prefers to operate in the realm of lawlessness. You've just mentioned the collapse of the Zakzaki trial. How do you even begin to talk about a trial? I don't know, you know, people, of course, know what happened, which is that the government itself massacred Shiites who are led by Sheikh Zakzaki, including killing three of Zakzaki's children, and or six of them over a period of 3 years, merely 3 years. They wiped out the man's six children, and they now, in terms of the killings, the Shiites suggest that over 1,000 of their members were killed. The government of Kaduna State set up a commission of inquiry, which in its own report said at least 347 Shiites were killed. Of the 300, according to the report, these people, the 347 bodies, were buried in mass graves in Mando, which is on the outskirts of Kaduna metropolis. And they were buried in 46 trucks, in seven trucks with 46 soldiers, who, and their burial took this platoon of soldiers over 6 hours to bury these bodies in mass graves. Yes, this is the government's own official admission. And what does the government do? Despite the report, they go to charge the victim with the murder. That's Zakzaki and his wife. That is the Zakzaki trial by on its own totally demonstrates to you the venality of the regime. There's no other word to find. Venality of the regime and the way it conducts business.
Prof, we're seeing quite a number of people, and I will just ask you this as a theoretical question and the last question on this interview. So the Nigerian Constitution allows freedom of association, and in recent times it's been difficult to understand how associations are sometimes graded up down the line for their activities to become terrorist organizations. What would be the legal definition of when someone says, my association is a movement, and some other people describe that movement as agitators, and at some point in time they describe them as pressure groups, and then down the line maybe as terrorist organizations? What would you say is the mainstream difference between when someone has a movement and when a group of people say we're agitators? Because it seems very confusing these days.
The Buhari regime has chosen to conflate legitimate advocacy with violence, and has chosen to determine for itself that people who are advocating for things that they're entitled to under Nigerian constitution should be criminalized and attacked. Physically and liquidated. And that's what the regime has done. And the president himself sees legitimate advocacy as regime change advocacy, which for him is a no-go area. If you remember in his Arise interview, he defined he defined the EndSARS movement as those children who wanted to march here to remove me, here being the presidency where the interview took place. So the government is so febrile about its own existence that it's just unwilling to countenance the kinds of rights and entitlements that make a constitutional regime worthwhile. And there is no reason, that's exactly the reason why you have the proliferation of banditry. Because when you cannot live under the constitution, you're a bandit. And the regime is a bandit regime. That's the only way to see it. That's the only way to understand what they are doing and how they proceed.
You're saying, if I do get you right, anyone who's not following the constitution is doing stuff that is best described as banditry in itself, if I get you clearly.
Of course, yes.
Okay, yes. Just wanted to be sure. Okay.
Hmm. That's precisely what I'm saying. And you see, unfortunately, they ended up pursuing symptoms rather than causes. So whether you're looking at Sunday Boko or Nnamdi Kanu or whoever else that you're looking at, those are the symptoms, not the causes of the Nigerian problem. The underlying causes the government chooses to ignore and will not attend to. And until they choose to attend to the causes, the symptoms are going to continue to proliferate and metastasize. The symptoms are going to get to the point where the government itself will be overwhelmed. And that really is the major problem here. We may not have time to go into those symptoms, but the symptoms are very clear to everybody, or should be very clear to everybody. And because the government doesn't want to address them, the reality is those symptoms are continuing to grow. Sorry, the causes are continuing to grow in their size and their effects. And the Nigerian state does not have a long time to address them before things get out of hand.
Mm. Well, we've been on this for years, and one thing is certain, as we go on this very journey of staying the course of time, one thing is certain, that actions and people's lives continue to be lost at this point in time. I have to say a big thank you to Professor Chidi Odinkalu, a Nigerian human rights activist, a lawyer, a professor and writer. He was a former chairman of the Nigerian National Human Rights Commission and currently the senior team manager for African Program of the Open Society Justice Initiative. Thank you so much, sir, for joining in this very morning. Now I'll allow you to go back to your coffee. I know that you enjoy coffee. I miss taking coffee with you.
Thanks so much, Femidi.
Thank you so much, sir.
Enjoy the day.
Yes, sir.